From caps to tees and from bags to bumper stickers, we have you covered. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/shop.
You may remember just before the end of last year, in December, we had Erica Harvey and Glenn Crowther on, and we've had Glenn on before that as well. Erica from Lobby for Good and Glenn from Sustainable Bay of Plenty. Well, Glenn is back with us this morning on RCR because there have been further developments involving him. Glenn, thank you for coming back. Great to chat to you again.
Yeah, great to be here, Paul. I'm really looking forward to having another chat.
Yeah, great to have you back. And okay, so what's the news? You're standing for the council at Tauranga local body elections. Yeah. Is going to have Glenn Crowther, his name somewhere in there now.
Yes, and amongst the nine wards, which is a bit of a changed electoral system for the people of Tauranga. So most people I talk to have no idea how it's structured. They get to have one vote. They used to vote, have six votes for councillors across the city, and now they just have one vote. Well, they have, you know, a vote for one councillor in one ward. But I'll be one of those candidates who'll be running and just try my luck out.
So what made you decide to go to the next level?
Well, yeah, I resisted for a long time because for the last year or so, I've had people saying to me, oh, you should run for council. And I've sort of taken it more as a joke. And then I realised the more people who kept saying it, the more serious they were. And I guess what persuaded me was when a number of, well, councillors, ex-councillors, you know, councillors from other councils, people who sort of know a bit about what's going on in Tauranga, they just kept saying, well, you know quite a bit about what's going on, you've got a balanced view, we think you could offer something. And I guess they persuaded me in the end. And probably the thing that swung it for me was that I've really tried to stick to a sort of evidence-based approach and just look at what's really going on as opposed to all the spin that you get these days in the media. And I've been a bit concerned about the direction of the city council around that area, where they, you know, there's some things that are out of their control, but they often tend to sort of spin what's going on, in my view. And I just want a more direct, open, transparent council, and one that's more accountable. And that's kind of the basis in which I'm running.
So you'll be a no spin zone.
Well, I will hopefully be a no-spin zone. But more importantly, if I happen to get onto the council, I would like them to be a no-spin zone.
Yeah, no,
I know that's a big ask these days, but, you know, why should that? You know, we elect the people to govern the city. They can just tell it as it is. And if it's good news, it's good news. If it's not, well, then that's just reality.
So how did Tauranga get here? It's been run by commissioners. The local government minister rejected a hybrid model of a mix of councillors and commissioners, as I understand it. The mayor stepped down. There were a few years ago. There was talk of bullying and bad behaviour, let's say, and a $2 billion hole. So, so how come it became so dysfunctional? Is there any core character behind all of this, or was everybody sort of losing the plot? Because that sounds kind of like what happened. Is that the way it played out?
I mean, that's obviously, you know, I'll have my view on it. I was pretty close to that council at the time because of my work. And I knew and feel I got on well with pretty much everyone on the council. I could understand why there were differences. I think some petty things got played up by some of those councillors, but also through the media. I think that was not helpful.
Oh, so the media drove some of that, right?
I think it was all exaggerated around the sort of petty politics side, but what was perhaps underplayed was the core sort of tension that was there. And in my view, there was, on one side, there were a group of people who genuinely thought, I think, that they were trying to do some good things for the city, and they wanted to see progress, and they would, term it that way. But other people would term it as just a very expensive program, you know, spending ratepayer money on things that the public didn't want. Again, a bit of a depends which side of the coin you're on. On the other side were a bunch of people who were really concerned about what the public thought, but they were described often as people who are holding back progress in the city, and that you know, they were trying to keep rates down and not investing enough into, you know, museums and stadiums and things like that. And that tension at that big picture level played out in some petty ways, in my view. And I think, you know, the mayor certainly was a bit polarizing. I think Tembe Powell was not like the previous couple of mayors who perhaps, you know, would try to pick up on what the sentiment was of the council. He had his own views. He tried to take the lead. That was his style. And that has its strengths. But, you know, I don't know if that's the right way to go about it if you've got a council who is reflecting some genuine differences in the community. And I think that's the reality, that it's a democracy and those differences are real. Some people want to spend more money and build more stuff, others don't, and, you know, we've got to work.
Yeah, but you've got to have the money, right? And if you're going to borrow it, you've got to be able to reasonably service that. Nanaia Mahuta, I think, was the local government minister at the time back in 2020. Do you think she overreacted? Because there are other ways of dealing with this too, like I think internal affairs people as observers on the council, you know, she went to full DEFCON 10 or whatever it is, it seems.
Yeah.
Was that an overreaction, do you think?
There was a preliminary step, but certainly what was being looked at was whether to, you know, they looked at an observer and then they were looking at a crown manager, I think it's called, where the council still operates, but they have someone that the government appoints to kind of, you know, keep them in order if something really goes off the rails. And I absolutely think she went in far too quickly, far too hard. But she was encouraged to do so by the mayor, by a group of people in Tauranga who are, if you like, the sort of, you know, the developer lobby group, the big business lobby group. They were wanting that to happen. And there were also, you know, certainly there is some evidence and a lot of talk that the council itself, as in, you know, the high ups in the council admin side, that they were keen to get commissioners appointed because they had all these projects that they had on their plans, and some of these councillors were putting the kibosh on them, and they wanted to have some commissioners come in who could actually rubber stamp them. And that's exactly what happened over the last few years.
So Anne Tolley was the chairperson of the commission leading Tauranga's council, and I got the impression last time we spoke that she's been very supportive of a lot of these projects and a lot of this development and all. Has she been aligned in any sort of way, do we know, with the business people and others who have perceived that someone was putting on the handbrake and wanted to get around that? Has she been good to them while she's been there?
Well, it's interesting because she and her other three commissioners have increased the rates for everyone significantly, but have particularly increased the commercial rates and even more so the industrial rates.
Right.
So you could argue that they haven't been afraid to kind of stick it to the big businesses who, such as the Port of Tauranga is the biggest one, who are, you know, paying higher rates than they were before, significantly higher. But having said that, the key thing from my perspective is that there are a bunch of projects that a group of people have for the last decade or more been trying to push in Tauranga that are, you know, people might describe them as non-essential or nice-to-haves, and they are things like a new stadium, an international exhibition centre, the museum, etc. And those things have all been given the green light. And not only that, but they have been given the green light and prioritised ahead of the very things that the people of Tauranga have made it clear that they think are the number one issue for the city, and that is transport projects to address congestion and to offer better ways of getting around the city.
Would you describe some of those projects as vanity projects?
I'd be happy to. Yeah, I mean, in the layperson sense, I don't think it's the commissioners sort of sitting there thinking, right, I'll get my name on a building. I think they'll be long gone, and I doubt that'll happen. But I think there's a, you know, that the general sentiment there is that I don't think some of those projects are the priority for the people of Tauranga. Now, I might have my own view. I personally think it'd be great to have a nice museum. but I don't think we should be having a $306 million, you know, civic museum and exhibition centre and library, because the cost of that comes at the expense of other things. And I think that's where, you know, my view, your view, everyone's view is important, but ultimately it comes down to, as you say, we have to work within a bit of a realistic budget here, and they just seem to be going all out to do some big spending.
And covering those capital costs, not necessarily from rates, but from borrowing. Is that right?
Well, yeah, that's normally the way it works with capital projects. So you borrow the money and then you spread the payback over a period of years. Now, if you're central government, you get the lowest interest rate of anyone in the country. If you're a big council like Auckland or whatever, you get the next cheapest interest rates. Tauranga's pretty good. It's got, you know, you get a reasonable deal on your interest. Then you get the next step out. You do what they want to do, what the National-led coalition are wanting to do with Three Waters, where they are encouraging councils to do CCOs, council-controlled organisations, to actually set up a separate structure and have them borrow the money. So it's not on the council's books, it's on the CCO books. And in that case, they pay them a bit higher interest rates still, higher than a council. And then you have even higher than that is this other off-the-books borrowing, which is what Tauranga City Council has done. So it's pretty much the most expensive type of borrowing that you'd do unless you just sort of went down the back alley with a loan shark. And you do a deal to take on, in Tauranga's case, you borrow $177 million, and after 30 years, the ratepayers pay back $525 million, and they haven't disclosed what that interest rate is, but it's significant. You can work it out, and it's significantly higher than what the council were borrowing at the time. And so that's part of the issue, that they have gone ahead with these projects and just, you know, they say used innovative funding. I think that's a euphemism for saying we've used more expensive funding that the ratepayers are still going to have to pay back.
Yeah, let us never forget, it has to be paid back.
Yeah.
It's not magic money. Okay, maybe you want to talk about some of those specific projects. You've sent me data on those, if we've got a bit of time, but I'm really curious about the survey that was done in February.
Mm.
And I've been reading through the 10 points of that. And probably it's not, you know, totally scientific and all of that, but it really is an overwhelming, it shows an overwhelming sense of Tauranga ratepayers and what they prefer, what they want, what they expect. And it's not just near the margin of error, it's way above that. So do you want to go through some of those points? I think that'd be interesting to hear. 92% want mayor and councillors elected in July 2024 to make all underlined key decisions. 92%.
So, I don't know if we underlined it, but certainly the public did. Yeah, the public did. And I think there's a bit of a, you know, it's one of those things, if you're in a certain bubble, you hear a certain view. Now, we've got to admit this is not a scientific survey. It's not a randomised citywide survey.
Well, it shaved 10% off it, to be conservative.
You can certainly say that the majority of people that I speak to, the majority of people in the survey, clearly want a mayor and councillors to make key decisions. And the narrative that's been going around that the public are quite happy to have commissioners, like the commissioners, just for those who don't know, what was in the national news a few weeks ago was that Commissioner Tolley was on, I think, Mike Hosking's show and others, saying that they're quite keen to have commissioners appointed, so to be a 50-50 sort of councillors and commissioners. And there was a view from some of the, you know, business networks and others in the city, oh, that's what most people want. But I think this clearly shows that's not what most people want.
Well, if you're in a bubble of 8%, okay, if this is accurate, and 92% have another view, you need to get out of your bubble, I would have thought. Even if it's less than that, it still seems to be an overwhelming majority. Let's go through these. 92% want city councillors or city councils' revised long-term plan, the LTP, to be subject to new consultation. There's another one.
That was because last time when Erica and I were on, they had consulted on a plan without Three Waters when we spoke to you. I believe they, around that very time, the minister wrote to the council and said, you need to include Three Waters. You know, we're a new government. We've got a new policy on Three Waters. That means all the waters infrastructure needs to come back into your plan because you guys are responsible as a council. And that immediately caused major changes in this, in their plan. And so they, we said to them, well, you better consult on that again because, you know, it's a different plan. And the survey was happening soon after they said, no, we're not going to do that.
Right. Okay. 95% prefer council cut back on some projects to keep debt down. Surprise, surprise, as used to say in the cartoons.
Yeah, that, this is a collaborative survey too. So there were different people amongst the networks. You know, I try to do things as collaboratively as I can. And, you know, some people really wanted to find out that that question. I thought it was like one of those questions, you know, if you're asking a turkey if they want Thanksgiving sort of thing, you know, most ratepayers, they do want to cut back on some projects to keep debt down. So I didn't read too much into that, but it was consistent with the first two and the next one, which is that 94% want a cheaper civic centre option, because at the moment that's it's actually $400 million. They've split out another 90-something million into a separate project so they can pretend it stayed at the original figure. So that's a, you know, it's a hugely expensive project. And what it shows is that whatever the number, these are all in the mid-90s, but let's say, you know, a vast majority of people, they want councillors have another look at everything, find some cheaper options and to revamp the plan.
Yeah, turkeys don't vote for Christmas, but people are aware of the constriction of cost of living issues like that and what that is they're seeing in their home budgets. So they know, I would have thought.
Yeah.
90% do not support TCC's proposed smart trip road pricing scheme.
Yeah, so that's something your listeners will probably be maybe getting used to, the idea that the government is floating of having road pricing approved through legislation in the next year or so. And that will enable, particularly I think Auckland and Wellington, to implement schemes where when people drive around on either the motorways or potentially on local roads, that they could be charged to access those roads and to drive for a certain number of kilometres. The technology, all that has to be implemented. You know, so it's a long way off starting, but the pieces are starting to be moved into place to allow that to happen. You know, for all the good things that might come from it, which, you know, Mayor Brown and others are saying it can help to reduce congestion, but there are also some other things that will come from it. And in a place like Tauranga, without a great public transport system, it means that you're kind of effectively just taxing people to drive on the same roads at the same time, because most people probably won't have much choice of when they drive around and how they move around the city.
Yeah. 96% do not support ongoing ratepayer funding of growth via rates or off the books. And this is the infrastructure funding and financing. What else to say there? And they want the government, developers and or new residents to pay for all growth infrastructure. That's fair enough, isn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting. The narrative in Tauranga and other growth cities has always been, you know, growth will pay for growth. Where it's good for the country. We want all these people to come in. We've got record immigration. And, you know, this is fantastic because you'll get more, you know, more people doing more stuff, boosting the economy. But what often happens is the councils are left with having to provide a whole lot of expensive infrastructure. They generally can't afford to do that. They don't have the, you know, they can't tax people. They just have to do it through rates. That soon gets to a certain limit to how much you can put on the rates and certainly a limit to how much you can borrow. And so they're looking at all these innovative, you know, financing tools and things. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm in the camp with what in our survey was 96%, the highest, you know, rating for anything, which is that the vast, vast majority of people say, you've got tools, you can actually have the government come in. If they want all this growth, they can chip in for it. Developers, they're the ones who benefit, especially the land developers who buy up land on the edge of the cities. and they sort of, the land bankers, wait for the price to go up when it gets rezoned, and then they build all these houses. They're not cheap houses, even though they bought the land cheaply, and it gets rezoned. They don't, you know, they don't give people cheap houses. They're still expensive. They just do what the market offers. So they make a mint. You know, they should chip in more. And there are places like, I think, Hamilton, some other places, you know, Auckland, I think, are doing more than Tauranga. I think Tauranga City Council is lagging in that area because the ratepayers often have to pick up a significant shortfall.
Yeah, that was 96% on that one. 83% do not support the proposed Tauranga Domain Stadium. Another 12% only support Stage 1. Another big ticket item, right?
Yeah, it is. There was a big scale plan, not as big as Christchurch's new stadium. So it wasn't a big, you know, whatever, I can't remember the size of that one, 30-something thousand, you know, with a covered stadium. This was smaller scale, but the big question I think the people of Tauranga have is that if you've got a good stadium in Hamilton, if you've got, you know, a rugby stadium in Rotorua, you know, all this sort of stuff, and you've got something that's perfectly good for standard sort of provincial rugby games in Tauranga now, is this a priority? It's not that people don't want it. I think it's just that they're saying we have to prioritise, and this is not the priority right now.
Yeah. There's also 86% not supporting paying much higher user charges for sports fields, boat ramps and other council facilities. I get that. 85% do not support Tauranga City Council's plan to close, Otamotai Pool. I remember Otamotai Pool. That's going back. I'm pretty sure that's the pool I'm remembering. In return for a new memorial aquatic centre. Again, big ticket item.
Yeah, it's interesting. Nainai has just about finished its, I think, $68 million 50-metre Olympic-size pool with, you know, Green Star standard sustainability features, multiple different pools, hydro slides, $68 million. Tauranga City Council's plan is for $123 million. So, you know, by the time it's done, it'll be double for sure. Double that for a 25-metre pool, half as long, not quite as sustainable. And it does have some bells and whistles and hydro slides and stuff. But the question is, how come the people of Tauranga have to pay, you know, nearly twice what the people of Lower Hutt have to pay for their pool? And their pool went up, you know, the cost escalated. And so the biggest thing, the reason this question was in, and you can look at it all around the country, these things happen where councils come up with a plan for a new facility and, you know, again, you can argue the merits of it. But in order to sort of make it look more financially viable, what they built into their modelling was to close this community pool. And this pool has been there for 50-odd years.
Yep.
It's sitting right next to a school, or three schools, a 2,000-student college, etc. You know, they use the pool. Others use the pool. It's, you know, as far as we know, it's still, they're doing research into it now, but we think it's still viable. They made a decision without even seriously looking at what the consequences were. And this survey just shows, again, what I think people all around the country are saying, which is that we actually want to keep our community facilities. They're a priority. And you use the word vanity projects. Well, I don't know if this aquatic centre is a vanity project, but it's certainly an expensive, big, you know, piece of kit. And maybe just another nice pool would be the community pools as well.
Yeah, and that's a lot of swimmers through the door over, well, how long before you even come close to that amount? And we'll finish up on this one. 94% support more transparency in putting the proposed Sulphur Point Marine Park development on hold until an elected council makes the final decision. Well, that kind of makes sense too, you know?
Seems to me. I think that the gist of the survey was just that, you know, the people who responded, and we did go out as widely as we could, it's obviously you're limited by who you can get to without the mainstream media. But the people who filled it in obviously felt very strongly in one direction. And we kind of go, well, okay, maybe this isn't an accurate reflection of where the city's at, but it certainly is far more likely to be in this direction than what the narrative is from the powers that be, if you call them that, and you know, they don't have any evidence on their side. There are council surveys. The city council itself does annual resident surveys, and they are showing the level of support for the commissioners and what they are doing is around the same level as when, you know, the council was disintegrating 3 years ago, which was 3 or 4 years ago, which is when the commission was appointed. Yeah. So, you know, they've made no progress. And yet the whole point of Nanaia Mahuta appointing commissioners was to actually, you know, get things back on track. And this is a very intensely disliked council now.
Oh, well, Glenn's on the way, folks, potentially, to save the day, maybe just... Just ruining you a bit there, but you're going to try, aren't you? You're going to, otherwise, why stand? You got to give it your best shot.
We need 6 to 10 good people around that table. I say 6 because in Tauranga this time, that will provide a majority of votes. And, you know, that's the reality of, you know, you can get some stuff done with 6 votes, but ideally we want a united council. We want people who will actually, you know, work in the interests of the community. And I think that's really what I'm saying is, apart from being a bit more accountable and having a level of transparency that people can see what's going on, I think we need to be far more focused on what the community wants as opposed to what, you know, a bunch of bureaucrats want or, you know, anyone else who dreams up these ideas.
Because they're long gone and you're still paying.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. That's exactly the issue.
Okay. Just to wrap up, when do you kick your campaign into action and what happens at Sustainable Bay of Plenty, your role there?
Well, I'm actually taking a period of leave during this time, partly just because I just want to make sure that I sort of don't get, you know, caught up in with wearing 2 hats at a time. So I think it's probably in everyone's interest I do that. And so I, you know, I've never done anything like this before, and I'm not a well-resourced campaign. I've got to say there are some things going on in the city that do make me concerned, and that is that there are, I've mentioned before, there's the Urban Task Force, which is a group of property developers and hangers-on, and they pay $5,000 membership fee and, you know, get together. Well, they've just yesterday had a function where Mahi Drysdale, who's been in the news,
he's standing for mayor.
TV and everything, and he's running for mayor. So they're behind him and a ticket of people. Now, it's going to be interesting if they come right out and actually say, we are backing these people and we think they'll be good for the property developers in the city. But what they have done is they've shared privately a little brochure that says, we're getting involved in this election because we need to protect our investments in the city. That's the quote.
Yeah.
So I'm concerned that you've got these vested interests who are, you know, I'm not saying these people are puppets, but they're certainly, you know, on a ticket that's either a formal or an informal ticket. They're linked to a Facebook page called Love Tauranga. It's all positivity, light, everything's wonderful. Tauranga's a great place. We need to keep progress going. You know, that's the narrative. And of course, it's very hard to argue against that narrative and not be accused that you're a bit of a, you know, a negative sort of naysayer.
A handbrake.
Exactly. And of course, I'm sort of probably coming out saying, well, I want to apply the handbrake to a few of these things. And I think it does make it more challenging if the people that you're trying to have an open debate with are not transparent about it. And I noticed that on one interview, you know, I mean, Mahi Drysdale obviously sounds like he's an interesting guy, and hopefully if he gets through, hopefully he'd do good things for the city. But I was a bit concerned that there was no mention of this group of people because who are backing him quite clearly, because I think, you know, once you get this group having some influence, it's not that their ideas are less valid than the rest of us, but it's just that I don't think it's a fair fight.
Well, when you don't know people are protecting opportunities that you're not quite aware of, you need to, you know, take notice of that, don't you?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think you can see for a long time, you know, that there've been that the best interests of the people who live here has been sort of put a bit to one side for the sake of growth. And I think, you know, that's to me, that's the line in the sand where you've got to go, actually, we've got to take a bit better care of the ones who are here. There's a lot more homelessness, people struggling to pay bills and rates and things. And if we can keep the debt under a bit better control, be a little bit more discerning in what we invest in, then I think the city does have a good future. But, it is a concern that the narrative at the moment that gets captured by the mainstream media is just, you know, let's just spend up on all these things and, everything will end up nice.
It always ends up that way, doesn't it? Not. Yeah. Okay. Just quickly, Glenn, got a minute left. When do you start campaigning and when is the election? I probably should know, but
that's all right. The voting is on in Tauranga from the 29th of June until the 20th of July. So that's the Saturday when I guess we'll know the results that afternoon. And yeah, like I say, never having done this before, I guess I'll just be making it up as I go along and pretending that I know what I'm doing. And there are a few, I think probably I'd have a couple of meetings or debates or whatever they are in the local community. I mean, this is pretty small scale. It's just typical New Zealand politics. It's not like Auckland where every single ward in Auckland is about the size of Tauranga City. Yep. So this will just, I'm just competing in one ward in Tauranga, which has really only got about, 20,000 people living there, and probably only a handful of those will bother turning up at anything. And then,
well, you never know when people start to feel the squeeze, the motivation goes up. Glenn Crowther, candidate now for Tauranga local body elections, standing down. In the meantime, from Sustainable Bay of Plenty, that was the hat he was wearing last time he was here. Glenn, good to catch up. Good to hear what's going on. And we're going to be interested to follow how you do and how the others do. So thanks for coming back on.
Yeah, thank you very much, Paul. And I did want to say I really enjoyed the interview with yourself on RCR a few weeks ago. That was fantastic.
So, did I interview myself?
Well, no,
but with Jerry, the chat interview. With Jerry. Thank you.
Yes, with Jerry. Yeah, that was wonderful. So, okay. But thank you for having me on again. And I just encourage anyone who's listening from Tauranga to get involved. And there are some good candidates in the different wards. And yep. I really. Hope that we have a good turnout.
Are you loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it, and right now they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.